This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And they are out there somewhere, armed and dangerous.
There was a hole cut out of the back of the cell through which these inmates escaped. They went onto a catwalk. We estimate they climbed down and had power tools.
These are very dangerous individuals. The state police ask that the public take no chances and report any suspicious activity. They could be literally anywhere.
We can find Bin Laden. We can find these guys, like, no problem.
Governor Andrew Cuomo says David Sweat and Richard Matt left a note behind saying, have a nice day.
It was an elaborate plot. We went back and pieced together what they did.
Everybody's shocked. You know, it's never happened. Nobody has ever gotten out of the maximum part of it.
They could be out of state, but they still could be holed up here in Dannemora.
We know how the movie Shawshank Redemption ended. That's where that spooky music came from. Everything else in that montage was real. How will the story of David Sweat and Richard Matt end? The convicted murderers broke out of the Clinton Correctional Facility maximum security section over the weekend. Clinton, in the far north corner of New York State, is also known as Little Siberia. The pair are at large after cutting through a steel wall, slicing into a pipe, smashing through a brick wall without arousing any suspicion until they were reported absent at a morning roll call. The break has been devastating for a small community where this prison facility is the largest building in town and the largest employer. Everyone in town has a worry or something to say. Joining us is Brian Mann, Adirondack reporter for North Country Public Radio. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Hi, John.
Is there any reason to believe that these two fugitives are at large in the general area of northern New York?
You know, a lot of people are speculating that they're far afield by now, that they've run far and fast. But a lot of the local enforcement, law enforcement investigators we're talking to here say there is still a good chance they're in the deep woods here in one of the abandoned houses or cabins. It's a very remote, empty area. So anything's possible.
And if they could get out of Little Siberia, I suppose they could get across the border into Canada, although that might be a challenge as well. What do you think about that?
Well, if they had documents ready, that's not a tough thing to do. It's very close to the Canadian border. One of the men, Richard Matt, had connections there. He had a girlfriend in Ontario back when his trial was underway. So that's possible. He also had connections in Mexico. There are two airports located pretty conveniently up there in Ottawa and in Montreal. So if this getaway was planned that thoroughly, then yes, they could have used Canada as a conduit to get to just about anywhere in the world.
Now, a prison like Clinton is definitely a part of the community. And in rural communities like this, there are, you know, lots of jobs associated with the prison. What's the speculation like in the community about who, if anyone, might have given assistance to these two?
Yeah, this prison sits literally on Main Street, the big white wall. It's the dominant feature in the village, and there is a lot of conversation about who might have been involved. Governor Andrew Cuomo has speculated that civilian employees or contractors may have been somehow connected with providing them the information or the tools that they needed to carve their way out. And there have been reports of specific individuals being interviewed or interrogated by investigators. A lot of that reporting still seems pretty sketchy to me, so we're not using names or identifiers at this point, but they are definitely focusing a lot of their attention on staff at the prison.
Would the contractors have been from the local area, or would these be contractors that the state corrections facility would use from virtually anywhere in the country?
A lot of these would be local guys. This is a prison that's old, built originally in the 1840s and upgrades through the 1860s. So, you know, you can imagine they're constantly doing repair work, just keeping this thing going. It's a sort of big white fortress that looks like a 19th century, you know, kind of old school out of central casting prison. And so there are guys in and out of there, men and women on the civilian side every day, keeping steam pipes going, keeping all the infrastructure going. So there are a lot of locals and also contractors from around New York State.
Now, we're told that David Sweat and Richard Matt had adjoining cells. Remind us of how long they have served their sentences, so how long they might have known each other, and therefore how long they might have been able to plan this together.
Yeah, David Sweat has been in prison since 2002, and Richard Matt has been in New York prison since 2008, so quite a long time. And I don't know how long their prison cells were adjacent to one another, but one of the things that's unique about Clinton Dannemora is that there is a very strange kind of public yard where all the inmates are allowed to circulate in an area that the prison guards have very little role in. There's a lot of sort of independent inmate activity in this facility. And so there would have been an enormous window of opportunity for them to coordinate, to plan, perhaps to work with other inmates, and even to talk to staff and contractors at the facility. It's a very secure place in terms of getting in and out. But once you're inside, there's a lot of free time and a lot of loose activity for a maximum security prison.
Forgive me for firing a synapse here, but you're describing a scene which seems almost directly taken from Shawshank Redemption, that common area where they were able to sort of go over into a corner and talk about whatever they wanted to talk about. That sort of thing is at this prison?
It's actually more dramatic than that. In Clinton Dannemora, there's a huge section of the prison yard that long ago, by tradition, the staff essentially handed over to the inmates. They have their own plots of land, these tiny little chunks of property upon which they can build things. They have little gardens. They have their own little culture that's built into that section of the yard. It's a remarkable place. And so within that area, there's gang activity, there's racial activity, criminal activity, really, as many guards have told me over the years, I've been there, that's an area that the inmates essentially govern themselves. It's an old school 19th century kind of prison yard.
How much anxiety has this prison break produced in the local area? And we're talking about a wide area of northern New York.
Yeah, it's really anxious. There are guys with shotguns on corners, checkpoints everywhere. There is real fear. These are bad guys who got away. That part is not at all like the Shawshank Redemption. They're scary people. The other side of this is, as you mentioned, this is an industry up here. This is a way of life, keeping men behind bars. And so for a lot of these corrections officers, a lot of their families, this is a real blow to what they do. They know there are going to be tough questions asked and fingers pointed. People are going to lose their jobs very likely over this. So there's a lot of nervous watching and waiting really across that spectrum.
Brian Mann, Adirondack reporter for North Country Public Radio. Brian, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
Anticipating the interaction of prisoners and staff and the vulnerability of even the most forgettable doorway or window, conduit, or ventilation duct in a prison is the peculiar architectural challenge of prison design. There are also design issues that relate to making prison life livable, if not exactly pleasant, and prison populations docile, if not exactly cheerful, all the time. All of these goals need to be met in the modern prison building. Is it an impossible task? Is maximum security a concrete and steel myth? Mike Brenchley is Senior Vice President and Director of the Justice Program at HDR Architecture.
Well, the best security is really a marriage between the operational protocols and the physical design. And so we focus very keenly on operational philosophy, inmate movement policies, how programs are delivered, and establishment of secure perimeters. And we work very closely with the staff and the operational personnel.
And how's all this evolved? I mean, in the old days, you can actually go to Philadelphia and see that old penitentiary that's still there, made out of stone. And it was designed originally as a place to rehabilitate prisoners back in the, I think, early 1800s. How has prison design changed?
Well, from, the early 1800s, that was the time when you first started to see single cells around a observation tower in kind of an indirect supervision model. You're right. There was a idea that there was a number of rehabilitative elements to that incarceration. Today, we have evolved into many more observational concepts, many more classifications of security levels, which allow us to tailor the design to the specific facility needs and requirements.
Now, does that mean that it's a fundamentally new challenge to create facilities that are multi-use, that have maximum security in one wing and maybe minimum security in another wing?
No, typically you'll have a range of security classifications within any facility, even if a facility is deemed a medium facility or a maximum level facility, you'll have varying degrees within that facility. almost every facility has to have some way to have a maximum security unit for administrative use, if nothing else. I mean, if someone doesn't want to follow the rules, they're going to go to that detention area or that maximum security area to be locked down for a while.
Who would you say, what kind of inmate would you say is the absolute enemy of the protocols that you try to design and create? What profile are you thinking of when you think of characters that could really compromise your security strategy?
Really, I think almost any inmate at any security level has time on their hands, as you mentioned earlier, to think about ways to breach whatever security perimeter they're faced with. So really, most of the facilities in the country are in the medium security classification. And so you probably have, just by sheer numbers, more of those inmates.
Well, then, isn't that interesting? Prison breaks are rare. Why would it be the case that a maximum security break seems to be more frequent than, or an attempt seems to be more frequent than minimum and medium security breaks?
Well, I think, obviously, those individuals are usually incarcerated for an even longer period of time than other classifications, and they are usually the most hardened individuals. So they are actually, looking to find a way to breach the security perimeter. On the other hand, you have many more security protocols and operational protocols in place for those facilities to make those actual successful attempts even more rare.
Well, Mike Brenchley, thanks so much.
Well, thank you.
Mike Brenchley is Senior Vice President and Director of the Justice Program at HDR Architecture, focusing on complex institutional prison projects.